And Game 1 of the World Series will be held at... Chris, any guesses?
Miami.
No, obviously not. That would be an NL park.
The Minnesota.
You don't believe that.
I believe it.
You do not believe the
Twins. I believe that we will Twins.
Very good. Total improv there. We didn't even plan that. What do you think? I'm thinking maybe Angel Stadium.
They have... I planned to go to sleep early last night, and I got myself all riled up. Just talking about how... Just, like, we don't realize how great Mike Trout is. I think I said this the other day, but, like... The numbers are staggering.
Well, imagine if he played in Cincinnati.
I mean, the man is amazing. He is, there's no, I don't even, he's the best young hitter since Ted Williams.
Yeah, he's pretty incredible. And he wins All-Star Game MVP 2 years in a row. But you still haven't answered the question, who's going to host the World Series? Who's going to win the AL?
I'm just avoiding that question. I'm going to go with I'll go with Cleveland. They're going to make a late run.
All right. Well, we can't get a serious answer from Chris. So
that is a serious answer. You know, I believe in the Indians' talent.
You know that right now, if you had to pick one team, it would not be the Indians to go to the World Series.
That's my. I'm going off the beaten path.
Okay. There you go. Chris Towers taking the Indians. I guess I'll take the Angels. Although, man, that is a wide open league. Who do you think Heath would take?
Maybe we could ask him. Probably the Tigers.
No, look, the Royals have a great chance as well. No question about that. Welcome to the show. Here on Wednesday, July 15th, we'll take a lot of emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We're going to tell you who we think could have big second halves and also who could get traded and how it might impact fantasy, whom you should pick up now, anticipating a future trade. First, though, the Jose Bautista watch. 24 hours, still not following me on Twitter.
Sorry.
Am I doing something wrong?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he followed me unsolicited, and I'm nobody.
Well, I'm equal. I'm not going to say that I'm less of a nobody than you. I would say we're on equal footing.
Yeah, I am one of his 513,000 follows.
Gosh, that's so weird. Just follow me already, Jose Bautista. This is really disconcerting. Okay, next category, next section of the notes is called Kershaw Sucks.
Ugh.
Got a couple of tweets about this. Jason A. Says, All-Star fan voting 1, Kershaw nothing. And Danny Whittle says, the fifth inning is why I agree with you, Adam, on All-Star selection. As a Cards fan, it's tough to watch an undeserving Kershaw blow this.
You know what, Danny? I hope the Cardinals make it to the World Series and get swept.
By the Angels? Or the Indians?
By the Indians. By anybody. I don't care. Who's there? By the Royals. That'll really cut deep.
That would actually cut pretty deep.
Like an undeserving Clayton Kershaw. Twist the knife, why don't you? He's the best pitcher in baseball. He gave up, like, seriously, we're talking about like a 2.85 ERA. Like, it's undeserving. If he had given up 3 fewer runs over the course of 18 starts, it's a 2.6 ERA. And we're like, yay, Clayton Kershaw. Ugh. He's fine. He's great. If he's so undeserving, trade him to me in fantasy. I will gladly take him.
It was kind of funny that he got roughed up, though, after the controversy.
Of course, that's what happens.
So, you have anything to say about the All-Star game? I mean, I enjoyed it. I love the All-Star game. I really do.
I don't. I find it so boring.
You love the home run derby, but you don't like the All-Star game?
Yeah.
And you think the Indians are going to win the American League?
What's going on with you today? I should preface this by saying I'm fighting off an illness, and I'm heavily medicated right now.
I think everybody figured that out already.
So, it's an exhibition baseball game, so it's a regular baseball game. It's not like the All-Star game in the NBA, like, you can play differently. It's just baseball. Like, you can't really spice up baseball.
But
you know?
It counts. And...
Yeah,
I just think it's great to see Clayton Kershaw face, did he face Trout? I think he did, right?
Yeah.
I just think it's great to see these matchups, and I felt bad for Brett Gardner, who I was really happy he made the All-Star team, and he has to come off the bench and pitch hit against Kershaw and strike out But yeah, I just thought
It's awesome to see. Like, I like watching the pitching in the All-Star game actually the most. I love watching like Jacob DeGrom come out of the bullpen and strike out the side on 10 pitches. Like that's amazing. Yeah, or Aroldis Chapman, like All-Star hitters all in a row trying to hit against Aroldis Chapman. Like that's fun.
Yes, and one of the news and notes items I had was that Joe Buck apparently has Jacob DeGrom on his fantasy teams because he. Loves Jacob DeGrom. Actually, yeah. I think Joe Buck is great, but he was raving about DeGrom, and rightfully so. DeGrom, certainly, if you didn't know about him before last night, which wouldn't apply to anybody listening to this podcast, you now know who Jacob DeGrom is.
There is a very good article on FanGraphs from a couple of days ago about the Mets starting pitchers and the special version of the slider that their pitching coach Dan Wortham teaches them. And it's actually really interesting and could help explain why they have kind of had all these guys come up in the majors and pitch better than they did in the minors.
We are going to discuss who might have big second halves. And we're going to take a lot of emails, like this one from Chris in Chicago. Do you guys see any hope for Ian Desmond to pick it up in the second half? I've had him for a few years in a roto league, but I'm thinking of dropping Desmond for Brandon Crawford.
I mean, I want to believe, but he's gotten worse somehow as the season's gone on. Over his last 28 days, he has 4 stolen bases, which is good because he wasn't running earlier, but other than that, he's got a 500 OPS over his last 20 games. That's really bad.
Yeah. I can't explain it. I don't think anybody can. And I can't sit here and say I'm all that hopeful or optimistic or that I'm trading for him. The only time I would trade for Ian Desmond is if I either had absolutely nothing to lose with who I was giving up or I have no chance to win the league unless I trade for Ian Desmond and he goes off in the second half. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to do anything that's going to hurt my team.
Yeah.
To get Ian Desmond. It would have to be the lowest of buy lows. I probably would trade Brandon Crawford for him because I don't have that much faith in Crawford. I kind of feel like we've seen him slipping since the first, I don't know, month and a half or so.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have Desmond's upside over Crawford.
Yeah, so Chris in Chicago, I don't think I would drop Desmond for Crawford. Just my personal take, but maybe drop someone else and bench Desmond and start Crawford. I could see that. Well, more on second half performers in a little bit. Injuries, news, and notes. So, I only have 2 things here. One is that Trevor Rosenthal was scratched from the All-Star game with arm soreness. 2 is that I wanted to make this show fun and funny and wacky since it's hump day and it's the All-Star break. So I went on Chris Towers' Facebook page last night to look for some fodder that we can make fun of him for, and I didn't find anything except for one.
I hope you like pictures of dogs.
There's a picture of your profile picture is you have like a cat on your neck crawling around on your back and neck, but it looks like a chicken. Has anybody told you that?
I look like a chicken.
No, the cat looks like a chicken in the picture.
Oh, I guess I could see that. Yeah, because you can't see her hind legs.
Yeah, and it's just like very white, and I thought, why does he have a chicken on his neck, but it's a cat?
Why wouldn't I have a chicken?
Yeah, I don't know. But here's the one thing I found out about Chris. Chris, not as a musician, but on a personal level as a person, Chris likes Kanye West, apparently.
I don't like Kanye. I don't hate Kanye West.
Well, everyone else does.
Yeah, I my biggest thing is like, of all the people in the world that we hate, like, Kanye West has never hurt anybody. He's just kind of a jerk sometimes.
I just thought it was funny that you posted an article like defending Kanye West.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
You're cool with that?
Team Kanye.
Team Kanye. So before we get into second half turnarounds, trade targets, guys who could be on the move. We talked about Dan Heron. That's a guy that we don't want to see move, but it could happen. Johnny Cueto. We can just go through this quickly here. If Cueto gets moved, let's say to Toronto, I think that might be the worst possible place. Would any, other than Colorado, which isn't going to happen, would any ballpark change your mind on Cueto?
It would be less about the ballpark, I think, and more about the team. Because the Reds have, over the last 5 years, had arguably the best up-the-middle defense in baseball. And really, if you throw in Todd Frazier, the best infield defense. You know, Billy Hamilton's a really good defensive center fielder. They don't have Cozart anymore, but he was really good. Phillips, Frazier, like, they've had a really good defense, and I think that helps with him having the lowest BABIP in baseball in that span. I think he's like a 257 BABIP over the last 4 years. So that would be a little bit concerning, but I think he's also like, that's just a skill he has. He induces weak contact, so I wouldn't be too concerned.
I don't really want to see any pitcher of mine get traded to the AL East. I believe that you're talking about, now if he goes to Toronto, then he obviously doesn't have to face them, but the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Orioles, they have really good lineups as well. The Rays don't.
And not there are some bad ballparks there as well.
Yeah, they're terrible ballparks. I mean, I always talk about that. You know, I think the AL Central's got great ballparks. I think the AL West is a mixed bag. I think the AL East, terrible ballparks for pitchers for the most part. And good lineups. So I don't think it would really affect anything if I were a Cueto owner. He's amazing. He could be good anywhere. Cincinnati, obviously, is a tough place to pitch.
Yep.
Closers. Papelbon seems extremely likely to get moved. He's openly campaigning for it. Ken Giles is only 27% owned. Aroldis Chapman could get moved. Tyler Clipper, Jim Johnson, K-Rod, I think, is an option. Al Melchior actually wrote a column. I think he had 13 bullpen situations, guys who could get moved or lose their roles, and who you need to be looking to pick up. Giles is an obvious one for me. Who are some other guys that are not closing now that could be closing by the end of the month?
Well, I guess it's Hoover in Cincinnati, right?
That's what Al speculates, yeah.
That would be one. I think he's got a decent upside. I don't know if he's got elite closer upside. His strikeout rate's way down, but he's got a 1.41 ERA and an ERA below 3 in 3 of his 4 seasons, so that's definitely a situation that Aroldis, especially with the Reds being out of it, they look like they're going to be selling off pieces, so that's one to keep an eye on. That seems like probably the second most likely. I guess Oakland, the problem with Oakland, they don't have a super obvious pitcher beyond Tyler Clipper, who hasn't been all that great this season despite his ERA. So I mean, who would you want out of the Evan Scribner?
Well, yeah, Al mentioned that you should probably just avoid them. Scribner's been really bad lately. Pomerantz, Mujica, O'Flaherty, these guys have struggled this year. I don't know. I think maybe Mujica, but it doesn't seem like a great situation.
And then if the Red Sox move Koji Uehara, I think they've got some really good young flamethrowers that we could see get a chance if they opt to not go with. Actually, Alexi Ogando and Junichi Tozawa could get moved anyway. So, you know, maybe Matt Barnes gets a chance if they move some of those guys.
Jeremy Jeffress in Milwaukee could be a good option there for you. I don't know who's next in line in Atlanta. Aroldis Vizcaino was mentioned as a possible setup man. That's what Al wrote in his column. So maybe he could move in if Jim Johnson gets moved. But right now they're in the race.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in a weird spot.
But it's really, I think Ken Giles, that ownership needs to come up. It'd have to be him in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, it definitely would be.
Okay. Carlos Gomez has been rumored to be on the block. He's usually better at home if you look at his career, so I don't want to see him move. Same with anybody on the Rockies.
Yep.
Tulowitzki, which doesn't seem so likely. Charlie Blackmon was mentioned as a trade candidate. He has hit 8 of his 11 home runs on the road this year, Charlie Blackmon. But if you look at the batting average, it's .321 at home, it's .253 on the road, and last year he was terrible on the road.
Yeah.
So I still don't want to see him leave. Some Padres starting pitchers, you know, and Craig Kimbrel for that matter, so I think Joaquin Benoit is an option. If Padres starting pitchers don't want to see Andrew Cashner move. Cashner Career at home, 2.66 ERA. Career on the road, 4.16 ERA. And I don't want to see anybody move from that park. And here's a wild card for you. I think the Dodgers are going to make a trade.
Yep.
They've been linked to Cueto. They should be looking for starting pitching. So could Alex Guerrero find himself in a situation where he's getting at bats either for the Dodgers or somewhere else?
I would guess not for the Dodgers. Based on everything that we've seen, it sounds like they would prefer to have anybody play over Alex Guerrero for whatever reason. They don't seem to like his defense especially.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would expect that he is involved in any trade that they do. It also seems pretty odd. Like, Andre Ethier is a pretty obvious trade candidate, too.
Well, with Crawford coming back?
I just think with the amount of guys they have, I think they could afford to lose him if it got them a starting pitcher back.
Okay. Anything we're missing here? Any big players who could have trade their fantasy values impacted significantly at the trade deadline?
You know, the problem is there's always one that we don't see coming.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we'll see what happens. Get on FanDuel and start playing. You're missing out. It's very fun. FanDuel's changing the way people play fantasy sports. Trust me, you're going to get hooked. Just give it a shot. Go to FanDuel.com. We've got a great offer code for you to use. It's CBSPOD. And also, we're going to have tournaments starting FanDuel.com/CBSPOD tournament every day where you can compete against us and the Daily Fantasy Live crew. But anyway, go to FanDuel.com. There's no season-long commitment. You can play any day you want. You can play every day, multiple times a day. You can play in tournaments, 50-50s, whatever. And it starts at just $1. So don't wait 6 months to try and win a league. Play today. Win tonight. Except not really today and tonight because of the All-Star break. But on Friday, get back there on FanDuel.com and get going and use that offer code CBSPOD for every dollar you deposit. FanDuel is going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. CBSPOD. Who's going to have a big second half, Chris Towers?
I'm going to be positive and say everyone.
Good.
Every pitcher and every hitter is going to be good.
Except Ian Desmond.
Except who?
Ian Desmond.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Well, you started with Carlos Santana.
Yeah. Yeah, I that's what he did last season. I think, you know, it's one season sample size, so I don't know if we can definitely say he's a slow starter, but there are guys like that. There are guys that hit better as the season goes on. Adam LaRoche is the poster child for that, but I just think everything points to Carlos Santana still being the same guy he was last season, except for the results. The process is there. He's still seeing the ball well. He's still, you know, his strikeout rate's actually down. I think we're going to see him go on a little bit of a tear coming up.
Well, it might have already started. Santana had four two-hit games, a home run, three walks, four RBI last week. He had a really good week. And it was really two seasons that I looked at with Santana last year, 2014. 737 OPS before the All-Star break, 860 after. And 2012, terrible before the All-Star break, 675 OPS, but 887 OPS after the break. So two of the last 3 years, he's been much better in the second half. And the other year, 2013, just had a pretty solid year all around. He had 268 with 20 home runs. So, yeah, we like Santana. Matt Kemp is the second guy you listed when I asked you for this list. Matt Kemp, big second half, really?
Early in the season, I looked at him. It was I wrote an article on May 27th analyzing his slow start. And his hard hit average had fallen from 40.3% to 33.8%. 33.8 is pretty middle of the road. Looking at it last night, he's actually back in the top 25 in hard hit average at 37.4%. So that means that in the month of June and July, he has to have been hitting the ball really hard consistently over 40% to get that average back to where it is. And I think that's a good sign. Hard hit average is a good indicator of power potential and power production. So I think we'll start to see him hit for more power moving forward.
So rest of season, would you rather have Matt Kemp or Brett Gardner? Tough. It's tough. I couldn't do it. I couldn't pull the trigger.
I guess I'd still have to go Gardner just because we've seen him do it this year.
Right. I couldn't pull the trigger and trade Gardner for Kemp. Maybe I would trade Gardner for like Kemp and, you know, a pitcher or whatever.
Yeah.
But Yeah, it's tough. You don't want to give up the great production you've gotten. Robinson Cano might have to disagree. Well, I think he'll turn it around. I just don't know about a big second half here.
He's already turned it around, my friend.
Yeah, but the strikeouts are so up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they still are. I've gone to this one a couple times, but the, you know, since June 21st, it's not classic Robbie Cano. It's not 320 with 25 home runs, but sitting 272 with a 792 OPS, four home runs, nine RBI in the last 20 games. The four home runs are the thing to look at because he wasn't hitting for any power. Early in the season, he was just driving the ball into the ground. I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't think it's like we're not going to get classic Robinson Cano.
It's just the whole thing with the parasite. That's been bugging him for almost a year now. But yeah. Bugging him. I didn't even about that. Nailed that joke. You know? But so how optimistic are you about Cano? Like, do you think he'll be as good as Colton Wong in the second half?
I think Colton Wong's ability to steal bases will give him the edge, but I think he can get himself back into the top 10 at second base.
Billy Hamilton, another guy I might have to disagree with you on. And I think, first of all, for a guy who has almost no power and is batting 220 on the year, he's the number 17 outfielder in Roto. That's Billy Hamilton. He's number 30 in points leagues. But there's no way I'm touching him in points leagues, and here's why. May 17th, they moved Billy Hamilton to the bottom of the order. Since May 17th, he played a few games in the leadoff spot, but mostly 8th or 9th in the order. He is the number 48 outfielder in points leagues since that time, May 17th. But still 19th in Roto. So the steals have been worth it. So let's focus on Hamilton in a Roto league more so than a points league. You think he's going to have a big second half?
He's never going to be the high BABIP guy that you would expect given his speed. He might be the fastest player in baseball, but you can't beat out fly balls. Doesn't matter how fast you run. He hits too many fly balls, and that's going to be an issue. That's going to keep his BABIP low. That being said, a 252 BABIP is just outrageously low, especially given his ability to beat out infield hits and his ability to beat out bunt hits. He's going to get a few more hits than the average hitter would. I think he's never going to be a D. Gordon 350 BABIP guy. D. Gordon puts the ball on the ground, he slaps it, he bunts it. But if he can get to 290, we're talking about a 40-point jump in his batting average. And along with that, a 40-point jump in his on-base percentage. And I think once you start getting to 310 in on-base percentage, it makes it a lot easier to move him back to the top of the order where he'll start getting more runs, he'll start getting more stolen base opportunities, and he'll just start getting more plate appearances. So that's what I expect. I'm not asking for massive production here. I'm just saying 265, 270 batting average, and that would be enough.
Well, fantasy owners really need Billy Hamilton back at the top of the order because batting leadoff, 27 runs in 36 games. That's tremendous. 27 runs in 36 games. Batting eighth or ninth, 14 runs in 41 games. So it makes a big difference for him. Now, of course, he could move back to the order, back to the top of the order, but Jay Bruce might not be there. I'd be surprised, but Todd Frazier might not be there. You know, they could sell and just be terrible. Marlon Byrd, who knows?
Yeah.
But it still would be helpful if he moved up. Okay, Corey Kluber, Michael Pineda, and John Lester, three pitchers that you picked to have big second halves. Kluber, Pineda, and Lester.
I think Kluber's an obvious one. I don't think anybody disagrees with that, except maybe you, who doesn't think he was an all-star.
No. He wasn't. He didn't deserve to be an all-star.
He should have been an all-star.
No. Why?
Because he's really good, and the all-star game's about the best players in baseball.
Yeah, for the first half of the season, that's what it's
about. The 338 ERA,
is fine, but it's not all-star. It's not all-star.
I'm moving on from the all-star. The all-star game's in the past, Adam.
Okay.
It's in the now.
He should have been in the home run derby, because that's so fun.
I would watch. Are you saying you wouldn't watch a pitcher home run derby?
I would 100% watch Mike Leake.
Not happened? That would be the most entertaining thing they could possibly do.
I'll give you credit. I think you just solved another home run derby problem. You just fixed it even more and you made it even better. Congratulations.
And next year, can we get just young guys in the home run derby?
No. I don't like that. I like seeing Pujols out
there.
Just
think of all the awesome young guys that are going to be up next year. We're going to have Gallo, Bryant, Correa. We'll have Stanton, Harper, Peterson. I would love that.
Nah, I mean, sure, but nah.
All right, so Corey Kluber's the obvious one. He's a mid-2 ERA guy. I don't think anybody really disagrees with that. But if someone isn't a believer or someone really values wins in your league, go out and get him.
Yeah.
Michael Pineda. I've been on the Michael Pineda bandwagon all season. What do you think of Pineda?
I think that he is an excellent pitcher who apparently, when he doesn't have his best stuff, he doesn't quite know how to pitch without it. And it leads to dreadful starts. And this is not necessarily just my opinion. This is something I've heard on the broadcast that he just, you know, some pitchers, I guess he hasn't reached that stage in his maturation yet where he can go out there without his best stuff and still gut out a really good performance.
Yeah.
Because there are too many really bad starts in there, and that's why he's got about a 360 ERA, 364 on the year. But I agree with you that he should have a good second half because he's too talented. 13 walks, 111 strikeouts. Says everything you need to know.
Yeah, the ground ball rate is above 50% still. I really like everything he's doing. And John Lester, I think, like, it just doesn't make any sense.
I don't get the hate for Lester. I mean, he got off to a bad start, but since then he's had a couple of bad starts here and there, I guess, but I just don't get it. Like yesterday we had that grade the trade where the guy was like, I'm tired of Lester or whatever. Lester's been really good. You know, I'm totally with you, Chris.
And I think with a player like Lester, at some point you have to judge him based on the performance itself and not what your expectations were. And the performance has been mostly pretty good. You know, he's got a 3.15 ERA since his second start of the season. So 100 innings, 99 strikeouts. The win-loss record's not great, but that's not really his fault. And there's a lot of 7-inning, 7-strikeout starts thrown in there. I think he's going to be just fine.
Well, the reason I didn't want to draft Lester this year was because I thought he had overachieved in 2014 with the strikeouts and maybe with the whip. But the strikeouts are still there. He's still striking out a batter per inning. The whip is high. It's 1.26. That'll come down. I don't think he'll be as good as he was last year, I guess, with whip. And he won't have a 2.46 ERA at the end of the year. But I'm totally down with Lester being a really good second-half pitcher, Chris. I think we were spot on because he's been pretty good.
Yeah. I think it's a situation where, like, you shouldn't have expected him to be as good as he was last year.
Right. But hopefully he got all that garbage out of the way in the first month. I have some names. See what you think here. Carlos Gonzalez told the Denver Post that he finally feels healthy. And that he said, quote, finally, I'm getting my timing back, which is the biggest key for me. I'm able to sit back on my back leg. It was something I wasn't able to do the last 2 years, but I knew at some point I'd get there. I'm still confident. And Gonzalez had a monster week entering the All-Star break. What do you think? Big second half for Cargo? The old Cargo?
I mean, no. Maybe. How do you buy into it? You know, at this point, it's two straight seasons of subpar production. He's been very good lately,
if you buy into the health. If you buy into, remember he had the fatty mass with tentacles on his finger last year?
Yeah.
And the knee injury. And if you believe that he, you know, I'll put both Cargos in there. If you believe that both of them are healthy, Craig Counsell said Carlos Gomez is finally healthy and we're seeing that. And if you believe that Carlos Gonzalez is finally healthy, then you could believe that both of them are going to have big second halves. With Carlos Gonzalez, I don't see him stealing bases like he used to.
No, and he has a 409 OPS with no home runs against lefties.
Yeah. But I could definitely see him improving from the garbage he's been.
I could see that. What if he gets traded?
Then
he
forget
might be droppable if he gets traded.
Yeah, then he's, unless he goes to a really good hitter's park. But if, like, I don't know, let's say the Royals traded for him or something, just forget it. I wouldn't want anything to do with him. I watched Patrick Corbin pitch against the Mets on Saturday, I believe it was, maybe Sunday. And for 4 innings, he was lights out, untouchable, great breaking ball. And then it all came apart. Matt Harvey homered off him. I think he gave up 3 home runs in the next inning plus. Had ended up with a bad start. And his first start off the DL wasn't great. But he's widely available in leagues. And I really bought into Corbin in 2013. I believe, you know, I talked about this with Al. I believe that he kind of got tired at the end of the season and the last 7 starts or so were pretty bad. But this guy was looking like a really good pitcher who was about to erupt. And I don't know if he'll do that first year back off Tommy John, but I think he's underowned. Mm-hmm. I think he could have a good second half. Not great, but good.
Yeah, I don't think he's an ace, but I think he can be helpful.
And what about Lucas Duda? Do you think Lucas Duda could have a big second half?
He is someone that I almost put on my list. He's been, I want to say he had a really great month of April. And has just been hot garbage since. I think the platoon issues might be back, but I think he's also just, he's not hitting for the power we expected, and I think that'll turn around.
But it's weird, Chris, the platoon issues, I don't know how they break down month by month, but over the season, he's been better against lefties.
Okay.
He's struggling against righties, which gives me hope.
That definitely gives me hope then, yeah.
Unless he just changed his approach or something, and maybe you could look at his spray chart. Is he going opposite field more to get the batting average up against lefties? I'm not sure there's an explanation. I tried to look up his average fly ball distance year over year, but all I could find was this year. It's 309 feet, which wasn't great. It was like 50, in the 50s, I think, in baseball.
He's been a little less pull prone, which you would expect to lead to less power, but he's still hitting the ball consistently hard. I think he's in the top 20 in hard hit average. So I expect his home run to fly ball rate to go up. He's definitely someone that I could see having a better second half than first.
Duda has hit 2 home runs in his last 3 games, but he has 5 hits in his last 13 games. He's not, 2 home runs in his last 3 games doesn't exactly give you the whole story. He's still been pretty cold. I think we're done with that. Ready for emails?
Yeah.
I want to get a lot of emails read over the week here, today and tomorrow specifically. So let's get to Lee in Hoboken, New Jersey, which I finally visited for the first time ever on Memorial Day or that weekend, and it's really awesome. Big Hoboken fan.
It's, I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's very nice. I don't know if Kanye West likes it, but you would know probably.
I want to say, Lee, fantastic reference.
Oh, I'm looking it up now because I don't know what it is. Dear Penny.
Oh, it's maybe my favorite movie ever.
Penny, Sapphire, and Polexia.
Almost Famous.
Oh, I've only seen that movie once.
Almost Famous.
Very, very good movie. I've only seen it once, but it's good.
Maybe my favorite movie ever.
I could see that because it combines music, which you love, which with good filmmaking, which you love, with snobby independent art that you also love.
Look, it's got the best performance of Jimmy Fallon's career. What else do you need?
Who's he in the movie?
He's their manager at the end.
I don't recall.
He didn't create the rainy day, man. He just has the biggest umbrella.
And he got through the scene without cracking up,
which is a big accomplishment for Jimmy.
Okay, here's the email from Lee. You guys are way off in the best sports movies. Cinderella Man, Miracle, Remember the Titans, Varsity Blues, The Greatest Game Ever Played, and Sugar are all better than any of the ones you named. Now, just
I've
to
never
refresh.
Heard of Sugar.
Yeah, I don't know what Sugar is, but just to refresh people's memories, I named Major League and Rudy, and I don't know what you said.
I could go with the Major League and the Sandlot. Although, question. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
We really have to have this discussion on this
podcast.
No,
I just answered the question.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Okay, then you, because my thing is, if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then The Big Lebowski is a sports movie.
Good comparison, and neither is
fits
the categories. So.
Okay, there you go.
So you agree with me about Die Hard?
No.
Oh, come on. So you think The Big Lebowski is a sports movie?
I would put it in there just because I like talking about The Big Lebowski.
Okay, Cinderella Man is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated movies ever. I agree with you there. Miracle's good, but Miracle, Remember the Titans, Varsity Blues, they're all good movies, but they're not epics, you know, whereas I think Major League is and I think Rudy is. And I've never seen The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Or Sugar, I'm assuming, is like about a horse because they give them sugar cubes.
I will look. I'm going to guess not about a horse. It might be about Maroon 5, because those are the only search results coming up. Here's the question that Lee has. It's about auction leagues. Do the more teams in a league increase or decrease the amount you spend on a high-end player?
I think more teams... that's really tough. I think it increases the amount.
I think it decreases. The more teams you have in a league, the more balance you want on your roster. Which is why we talk about making 2-for-1 trades in shallower leagues, giving up 2 players to get 1 better player. You want more elite players in the shallow leagues because you can go to waivers to get good guys. You can't do that in deeper leagues, so you want more balance on your roster. So you're never going to see me if I'm doing a 14-team auction or deeper. Just count me out on Mike Trout. I try to get a first-round pick in there, but I might rather have like 3 second-round type guys on my team than 1 first-round guy.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And, you know, a lot of like 4th-round type guys on my team too. You want balance. Sugar is a baseball movie about a Dominican baseball player who is going to the United States.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah, me either. Todd says, in a standard 12-team points league, I have a very middle-of-the-pack mid-year standing. I have a few super-duper stars in Trout and Harper, Strasburg and Rendon on the DL, and the rest of my team is about middle of the road. To make this a good topic that applies to many team situations, what would your strategies be for trading and or waiver wire acquisitions to try to gain position for the second half?
I think in this situation, would you consider looking for a Godfather offer for Harper? Because he can't be this good, right?
I have Harper in one league. It's a 16-team league, and so this kind of goes back to the last email. I want to trade Harper for 2 outfielders that I feel like I can start every week, no question about it. So maybe like Yoenis Cespedes and AJ Pollock or something like that.
Yeah.
Which might seem a little low. It probably is a little
low. I think you need a lot more than that. I think you need...
In a 12-team league you do, but in a 16-team league I'm not sure because again...
Yeah.
2-for-1 the other way is good in a 16-team league. But yes, I would look to trade Bryce Harper. He tweaked his knee earlier this year on wet grass, and it scared me a little bit. So if you could get the moon for Harper, who gets injured every year, I would not hesitate to do that.
The thing with Harper is he's having an obviously amazing season, but like, can he really be this good? Here's the list of players who have had better seasons than him in OPS plus in Major League history since the live ball era. Ruth, Gehrig, Mantle, Hornsby, Williams, and Bonds. That's it.
Wow.
That's the short list of best players ever.
Yeah, that's a great
point.
So,
like, as good as Harper is, and as, like, I really think he might end up being the best player in baseball, you probably have to expect a little worse production in the second half, just because, like, he's in rarefied air here.
And I think to answer your question about what can you do, what strategies to improve your team, that's really been the point of yesterday's podcast and today's podcast. We're looking for sell high guys. We're looking for buy low guys.
Yeah.
In terms of waiver wire, there are a few pitchers out there that you could take some gambles on. I think Kevin Gausman has a lot of upside. Matt Latos has
even
been
Irvin Santana, if he's still available.
Yeah, he's got some upside. I think Patrick Corbin has some upside. But I think the best thing you can do is do an honest evaluation of your team and look at the guys who have gotten you to where you're at now and say, who do I just know is not going to do this in the second half, and try to make some trade offers for that guy. And don't take it too literally and, well, I know Bryce Harper can't do this in the second half, so I'm going to trade him straight up for Jose Bautista. No, don't sell low, but sell high on players that you know are going to get you a lot of trade value and target some buy low guys on the cheap. You know, I say buy low, sell high a lot, and I think it probably falls on deaf ears at times because maybe I overkill it. But I truly believe that if you're in a competitive league, it's tough to win without making 1 or 2 really good trades throughout the year. I think you have to be aggressive.
Yeah.
All right, from John. And by the way, if you're kind of falling out of it, don't love your team, I think Anthony Rendon is worth a gamble on a buy low.
Yeah.
You could probably get him pretty cheap right now. John, dear whoever is left at the CBS podcast studio, that would be us. You guys mention ownership percentage a lot. What percentage corresponds to a need to pick up a player in a league? Obviously, most listeners use different formats, leagues, points, and host sites, but for someone like me in a 12-team categories league, what ownership percentage on the podcast should I use as a benchmark for picking up players?
I would say 75% means they're probably owned in nearly all 12-team leagues, right?
Yeah, 80. 75 to 80, yeah.
So anything below that, anything in that range, you're starting to reach a point where, like, if you want this guy, you're going to have to go get them now.
Right. Yeah, and I think there are guys that are owned in 10% of leagues that at times you're going to want.
And there are guys that are owned in 90% of leagues that I have no interest in.
Absolutely. So it's a bit of a tricky question there. Don't let ownership percentage fool you too much. The best thing that it's good for, I think, is giving you an idea of how aggressive you have to be to pick up players at times.
Yeah.
You know, like Kyle Gibson, for example, if you wanted to see more from him, you still can. Because people aren't rushing to pick up Kyle. People are still not buying in. Al is. But if you want to see like another great start from him, he's still out there. You know, Corbin, another example. You don't have to get him now. You can probably wait.
Yeah.
All right, Mike from Boston. On Tuesday's podcast, you mentioned your favorite type of league. I was wondering if you could expand and tell us, what is your ultimate favorite league? What would your favorite league be? Favorite size? Would it be auctions? Would it be keepers, AL only, NL only? What's your ultimate league, Chris?
12-team mixed keeper auction.
Head-to-head categories for you.
Head-to-head categories. With roto, roto rosters, 5 outfielders, 2 catchers.
I'm pretty much with you. Definitely 12-team mixed. Roto rosters, maybe 1 catcher. I don't really care to roster lousy catchers, but it does add some strategy. And I would say enough relief pitchers where there are not enough closers to go around, so you have to prioritize it on draft day. Not everybody is going to be able to field... not everybody's going to be comfortable with saves, put it that way. It can't be an easy position. And I don't want to do dynasty, but to be honest with you, I've never done a baseball keeper league or dynasty league, so I don't know that I want to do it. I like seasonal leagues better, and I don't want to have anything to do with minor leaguers.
See, I like keeper leagues and I like minor leaguers because it's a way to keep people involved when they would otherwise check out.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? That's a good point, actually. And this guy, Mike, mentions that he likes daily transactions.
No daily transactions. Daily transactions are the worst.
Why?
Because it doesn't reward having a good team. It rewards being anally retentive.
There are certain things you can put in place to limit... the anal retentiveness of your league.
Yeah, like if you put innings limits or at bat limits for the season, fine.
Yeah, and I think the reason why we didn't really like daily transaction leagues is because we're in a lot of leagues and it takes a lot of time. Yeah. So there are times when I forget to set my lineup in my 2 daily transaction leagues, but I do like them. And I don't know. Maybe I've seen the light. I might actually prefer them.
No, I hate them. I am vehemently opposed.
I'm in a head-to-head categories daily transactions league, and I'm embarrassed to say this after the hate I spread on daily transactions leagues. I think I might be coming around. Hey, gosh. I like them both. I'm fine with either. But I can't do too many daily transaction leagues. All right, next up. Another Mike. This one's from Rhode Island. Grade the trade. Dear, ignore, ignored, and ignoring. I sent a grade the trade email the week of July 4th. I listened to every episode that week, hoping to hear my grade. I knew there was a mailbag that Friday, so I figured it would be then. To my surprise, Adam announced that the podcast had got through all the emails sent to it, but I knew that wasn't true. On yesterday's podcast, Adam asked for more emails, but not grade the trades because, quote, they don't help a lot of people. Personally, I like all of the grade the trades. It's a fun and efficient way to see the value of players. Below is my grade the trade, although I know it won't be read. To the next email... No, I'll read it. I'll read it, Mike. Give up Garrett Richards and Marcus Semien. Get Anthony Rendon.
Well, I know Al hates this one. I think this would have been fine at the beginning of the season if Rendon was healthy, and we knew going into the season that he was like a second-round talent. But with his injuries, I think you're giving up too much.
You're giving for Richards and Simeon?
Richards and Simeon is too much to get Rendon right now.
I agree. And Garrett Richards is a guy that Al mentioned. Good buy-low candidate. Maybe you can make improve your team with that. I'd give this a D+.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
From Bill, says, Dear Savants, Gurus, and Nerds, please rank the following for the rest of the season in a head-to-head points league. Chris Carter, Matt Kemp, Lucas Duda, Carlos Santana.
Well, we already talked about three of those four. Mm-hmm. I'd probably go Santana. Yeah, the Kemp Duda thing, I'm not sure. I'd probably go Kemp just because he's an outfielder. Kemp, Duda, Carter.
Yeah, Carter's clearly last and Santana's clearly first here. Grade the trade from Craig. Give up. This is a 10-team keeper league. He's tied for first. Give up Corey Dickerson and Kevin Gausman. Get Yasiel Puig and Wade Miley or Shane Green.
Definitely not Shane Green.
I would actually maybe prefer Shane. They're both so bad.
Yeah, I'd rather not have either of them.
I mean, you're dropping those guys and picking someone up off waivers.
It's a keeper league.
So Dickerson and Gausman for Yasiel Puig. He's in first place. So Puig and a crappy pitcher. In first place, doesn't want to wait on Dickerson anymore.
I think that's fine. I think it's like a C. I don't think it's a huge win or a loss. Dickerson's injury this year is really worrisome.
Okay, yeah.
And if you're going for it, I like the Puig upside there.
Dear, this is from Clint in Kingsport, Tennessee. Dear Mark, Ryan, and Sean.
It's early 90s, late 80s Chicago Cubs?
Yeah, looks that way. Sean, S-H-A-W-O-N. 16-team, 5x5, Roto, two catchers. What do you expect from Kyle Schwarber rest of season?
There's a chance he gets called up. I think on yesterday's podcast, you mentioned that if Montero's injury is serious, he could get the call. I think if he does get the call, he's going to be awesome. I'm just not sure where he plays.
I'm kind of interested to see how he would do as a catcher, because when he came up, he was DHing.
Yeah,
I have skepticism with rookie catchers because their first priority is to catch and to learn the pitchers.
It's really tough.
Yes.
You know, so catchers are often the latest bloomers.
Yeah, it could affect their hitting. But given the state of catchers, if he comes up, you have to add Schwarber. And you might want to add him now if you have a free roster spot just in case.
I mean, he could be a top five catcher. He's hit absolutely everywhere that he's gone.
But Clint, to answer your second question here, you have Posey and Vogt. I think it's too risky to trade Vogt and pick up Schwarber just hoping that Schwarber's going to fill in for him. It's a little too risky. Here's Lamont. Looking for the best outfielders for an end-of-season run in a 10-team head-to-head league. Rank these four outfielders. Rank these outfielders. There are actually five of them. Matt Kemp, Matt Holliday, Corey Dickerson, Carlos Gonzalez, Christian Yelich. Kemp, Holliday, Dickerson, Gonzalez, Yelich.
I think you got to go Holliday first. Kemp, I'm so... Because I said I expect a big second half from him, but... it would be crazy to put him over Dickerson, right?
No.
Just because Dickerson's got that plantar fasciitis.
There's no timetable for Dickerson. Yeah, it would be crazy if Dickerson were healthy, but... No,
Holliday, Kemp, Dickerson, Yelich, Cargo.
I'm encouraged with what we're seeing from Yelich, Chris. It's been a lot better. And Evan from New York City. Yan Gomes or Derek Norris in a categories league with OPS as a category? Gomes for me. This is 2 years in a row where Norris has started off well, and I think he's batting like .230 now. He's been awful.
On the other hand, Yan Gomes is batting .218.
Yeah, I know.
With 44 strikeouts and 3 walks.
Yeah, well, he's not a very good walk-to-strikeout guy, but I think he's got legit power, and if the Indians are in fact going to go to the World Series, They're going to have to get something out of Yan Gomes.
I'd probably go Norris.
Yeah, Yan Gomes, you're not helping my case here. You're not having a good year at all.
No, he's been really bad. And he had the injury. And it was a wrist injury, right?
I never remember injuries. Wrist injuries only bother me if they're structurally...
it was a knee injury. Which, okay. That's also an issue for hitters, as we saw with Victor Martinez for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going Norris.
Okay. Can't fight you too hard on that one. Chris Towers, great show.
All right.
Indians forever. Kanye forever. And fantasy baseball forever. Thank you guys for listening. Adam Azer, Chris Towers here. Back tomorrow with another podcast. I have no idea who's going to be on it, but Chris will be all right.
Heath and I believe.
Oh, Heath's coming back on?
He's back from Legoland.
All right, cool. That means Heath, we're going to hopefully have him on football and baseball tomorrow. So thank you all for listening again. I think I've said that enough. Thank you guys so much. Really, you mean so much to me. And talk to you tomorrow. Oh, I have a dentist appointment today. That sucks. Just wanted to share that with everyone.
I've gone the last 2 days.
That's even worse. Hopefully, yeah. It's one and done for me. Bye.